Okay, well, thanks everyone for coming. My name's Rob Pilling. I'm going to be sort of chairing the meeting. And just as, by way of introduction, I'm a member of Sheffield Community Renewables. I'm also coordinator of Sheffield Climate Action, which I'll mention briefly in a moment. But firstly, just some quick housekeeping. There's no fire alarm planned, or no fire practice planned, so if anything goes off, it's for real. And there'll be various fire marshals, Ronan and Spila, will leap up and tell you where to go. Basically, we'll just leave slowly out the front door. The only other thing, the toilets are just out in the foyer on your left, and I think that's all the housekeeping we need. So we've got a fairly packed series of presentations and discussion tonight. Hopefully these will both interest and inspire you, and maybe encourage you to carry on and get involved with some of the projects that we're going to be talking about. It's also the public launch of Sheffield Community Renewables, so we'll be telling you who we are, where we've come from, and what plans we have. Certainly don't want it to be a one-way process, so please do ask questions and get involved in discussion, and don't be shy in coming forward or worry about asking anything stupid, because I'm sure it won't be a stupid question. So to kick off, we've got various presentations. I'm going to just say a few words about Sheffield Community Renewables. We've got something on Community Hydro, Renewable Energy for Schools project, something on Community Wind, and we'll take a few questions or comments as we go along, but also there'll be a room for a more detailed panel discussion if people have a lot of questions at the end. And then after that, we'll move, there's refreshments in the foyer, so people can carry on some informal discussions, and if they're really committed, there's possibly a move to the DevCat later on as well. So a little bit about Sheffield Community Renewables then. And by way of explanation, I'll just say something about Sheffield Climate Action as well. Because the group came together as part of a Sheffield Climate Action project called the Matchmaker Meeting, which we held back in November. And the aim of that event was to stimulate action around climate change. It was bringing people together with similar interests to talk about ideas and to turn those ideas into something more practical. And on that day, we set up nine new groups, and Sheffield Community Renewables was one of those. So when we talk about what's going on today, that's just the tip of the iceberg, really, in terms of what's already going on in Sheffield and also the potential for future action when people come together around some of these big issues like climate change. And perhaps also some of the things which raise out of today's presentations, you'll see that while we're taking on kind of big global issues, there are some really strong, positive, smart and sustainable ways of doing that, which help support sort of smaller scale issues like social cohesion and support local people, and it can really be quite positive rather than sort of doom laden messages which sometimes seem to hit all the headlines. So that was a little bit about Sheffield Climate Action, and there is a poster which gives a bit more details about what we're about, so if anyone's interested, do look at that. But today is first and foremost about Sheffield Community Renewables, and as I said, that the group arose from that matchmaker meeting, and there was for me a very seminal moment at that meeting when Ronan, who's one of the founding members of the group, gave a really great, inspiring vision of how we could build community, well, we could build renewable energy schemes and use them both for reducing our emissions but also helping communities grow and prosper. And if anyone else who was there, I think they'll probably remember what I'm talking about. And from that moment, it's great to be able to trace things back to that one moment, and things have really rippled, the ripples have spread outwards from that moment, and they're continuing, and it's great to see so many people here today as well, continuing along that process. So the group started, and we set up one of our first meetings, one of our kitchens, I think, near Netheredge. And we set up, what are we going to do? We had this vague idea around community renewables. And the three things we came up with were to support the development of renewable energy, local sustainable sources in and around Sheffield, and to do that in a way which promoted a community approach, so maximising benefits for local people. And the third strand, which really appealed to me, was it was going to be very practical. We wanted to make projects happen. We wanted to get schemes in the ground. I think that was really quite inspiring, and it also makes it very, very measurable. If 6 months, a year, 18 months down the line, we can't point to projects that we've helped to create, then basically we've failed. But that said, I think you're here tonight. I'm really confident that we won't fail and there's going to be all sorts of things coming out of this work. We set ourselves some, they're quite kind of big ambitions, so we set ourselves some more manageable bite-sized stuff. And you'll see some sort of holding public meetings, so that's one thing we've ticked off. We've also getting organised as a group. But what we're really interested in these projects, and we wanted to do something that was kind of bite-sized and manageable, and then maybe something that was a bit more ambitious. And these have kind of morphed. I think Mark might question whether the schools project is bite-sized and manageable, but these have morphed into our schools project and the proposals around the hydro scheme, which we're going to hear a lot more about now. So without further delay then, let's get into those more detailed project presentations. And the first one we have, Steve Welsh. Oh, final to say is that we're going to be talking about stuff which is either things that Sheffield Community Renewables are doing or things which are inspiring us or partners we're working with. So I'll kind of point out as we go along how it all relates to Sheffield Community Renewables. But so the first one, Steve Welsh from Autopower Enterprises, who are a hydropower developer, and Steve is the managing director. They're working on projects across Northern England. Their first one is in the construction phase now, and many of you may have heard of it. This is the Torres Hydro New Mills project, and Steve's going to talk about financing these schemes and related matters. You can either into that one or into the lectern, it's up to you.
Can everybody hear me? Yes, I can. Good evening, everybody. My name is Steve Welsh, as Robert said. Robert's talking there about the sort of seminal moment in which things happened in Sheffield. There was one for myself coming back on the train from work two and a half years ago. And I was talking to this woman who I shared the train with, and her job was to look after the river and find money for sort of projects and what have you. And she said, oh, I wish we could find a means by which the river can pay for itself. And we looked at the river we were passing, and lo and behold, there's a river weir. And I thought, yeah, now there's an idea. Because the river weir sort of powered the Industrial Revolution, 200 years ago or whatever. And it's actually possible to reuse them again, because the infrastructure's there. And we think it's possible to reuse them again to produce green power this time, instead of powering the Industrial Revolution and all the social and environmental problems that I've had. So we're going to go back to using the river weirs. So I want to talk first on three things I want to do tonight. One is to talk about ourselves as a company. Second is to talk about New Mills Hydro. The third thing I want to do is talk about some of the work we've been doing in Sheffield, because I think there are fantastic opportunities marrying on with something which Rob was saying there, whereby local communities can actually benefit economically by these hydro schemes. So Water Power Enterprises, not everybody gets the acronym H2OPE. It's, sometimes people do, sometimes people don't, but never mind. It's Water Power Enterprises, and we are proud to be a social enterprise. Not that we're not a private company, we're a social enterprise, we're a community interest company. I could talk for a long time about that, but I'm not going to. But our mission is to reduce carbon emissions. And we want to do that by community involvement. Now, I put at the bottom there, small-scale hydro, private equity versus social equity, because private equity wouldn't touch these things with a barge pole. If we actually went to Dragon's Den and talked about some of these initiatives, they would laugh us out of court. This sort of scheme, small-scale hydro, is really about social equity, and I'll explain what I mean a bit later about that. Right. The data in 2015, I want to talk about what our aims are, but 2015 is important because, and I managed to, this is my little piece of paper here, for two reasons. First of all, it was 17th of November last year, 2007, 17th of November last year, two things happened. One was my 50th birthday. And before I went out and got and forgot why I went out, I noticed on the news that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change produced its fourth and final report, well, not the final report, but the fourth report about climate change. Now, in that, it says lots of doom and gloom stuff. And one of the things I'm going to talk about is a bit of doom and gloom, but it does help set the scene in a way. Without running the risk of boring you silly by reading this out, I will try and paraphrase it slightly. Members of the panel said that a review of the data led them to conclude that as a group and individually, reductions in greenhouse gases had to start immediately to avert global climate disaster. The panel that was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, if you remember, said the world would have to reverse the growth of greenhouse gas emissions by 2015 to avert major problems. And there's a fellow called Rajendra Pachura, scientist and economist, who heads up the panel, said that there's no action by 2012, it's too late. What we do in the next 2 to 3 years will determine our future. This is the defining moment, and he's absolutely right if you look at climate change. So this tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is your opportunity to get involved. And I want to sort of talk about the process by which you can get involved and by which people in Sheffield should be able to benefit from. That's the only thing I'm doing from. So our aims, I'm going to try and go through this quite quickly. What a power enterprise, our aim to install 5 megawatts, that's about 5,000 kilowatts of capacity by 2015. That's the equivalent, 19.5 million units of green, well, that's what it produced, nudging 20 million units of green electricity per year, saving 6,500 tonnes of carbon dioxide per year. That's equivalent to 24 million car miles. And we're currently working on those sites at the bottom with 8 megawatts of capacity. The next one, please. The technology we use, and I now refer to this a lump of machinery in front of me, is the Archimedean screw. Clearly it was invented, 2,500, 3,000 years ago and used as a pump. But some bright spark in a company in Germany called Ritz Actual produced these things, and have produced them for 40 years, thought it would be a good idea to turn them round, instead of acting as a pump and pushing water uphill, to have water go down. If water goes down, gravity turns the screw. I'll do a demonstrate. Water goes down, gravity, the water turns the screw, sorry, like so. The turning motion with a generator on top produces electricity. Simple. There's only two moving things, a bearing at the bottom and a bearing at the top. So the maintenance of these things is extraordinarily simple compared to traditional turbines, which I'm certainly not dissing, but traditional turbines are extraordinarily complicated pieces of machinery. That isn't. That, by the way, is a model. Someone thought that was actually the actual size of these things. No, they're not, but it's a model. We visit the sites, some sites in Germany. That's one on the left and right, clearly. I forget, the one on the left is near Nuremberg. Only about 20 kilowatt sites, all privately owned, about 70 sites on the continent with Archimedes. On the far right, we went to the beautiful German Alps, and that's a small town called Kufstein. And you're just about to see the weir at the back end there, the picture on the right-hand side, on the coming point. Here's the weir. So the water travels through here, the turbine, the screw is actually here. So it travels through and goes back into the river there. So that's the weir. Water goes through, down and back out. Simple as that. The reason why we want to major the Archimedean screw is we think, and we've done research on it, that they're best for small heads. Small heads would be like river wheels, 2-3 wheels, that sort of size. Very simple technology. They cost less than traditional turbines, but there's two other key things. One is that they are fish friendly. Fish can actually travel down these things. When we visited the site, that site on the left, he didn't have some fish, but he had some big logs. And he said, just throw them down. So he did, and it just travel down. And fish can travel down as well. And the Environment Agency have accepted that as a fact. And that's very important when it comes to installing small scale hydrants. These little details that are important. So the Environment Agency is into them. The second reason I have absolutely forgotten, oh yes, I haven't forgotten, is related to fishergate and debris. Because debris and fish can travel down these things, but the traditional turbines, they can't. They're not allowed to go anywhere near it. So if they do, we'll totally destroy the machine. So that means, next one, thank you. Forgive the angle of the picture, my son took it because he went with us to Germany. But that sort of thing on big pattern turbines, big traditional turbines, has to be put in. What it is a huge big crane with a big bucket on the end, and every half hour everything stops, and it pours down, and there's a big mesh stopping any debris getting into the pattern turbine, the turbine. And that clears all the debris out, moves away, and puts it down. But the more debris gets sucked up against the mesh, the less power comes out of the turbine. So that's the reason. It costs less. You don't need that sort of apparatus for that. It costs less, and that's really good. Quickly about us, we've got a dual-track business plan. The first track, community-owned hydro. We do all these sorts of things. Detailed scheme design means about having to get plans drawn up for planning permission, regulated permissions. The Environment Agency's got to give permission for it. They have to grant what's called an abstraction licence. Power purchase agreement, someone has to buy the electricity, you have to have a legal agreement with them to do that. Raise finance, I'll go into that later. Community ownership, I'll go into that later. Project management and maintenance, I'll go into that later. So the second track is that we're actually also looking for river weirs, which we ourselves as a company, rather than the community, can own. because we need an income stream ourselves to make us sustainable. But anyway, because we're a social enterprise, and the profits we make, that will just pay our overheads. So any of the profits we make will be ploughed back into the first track, developing community hydro schemes, which is what we're about. So, one of the new bills, I should think that Till at the far at the back there, Till Geiger, is a member of the Tolls Hydro New Mills, and he's speaking after me, so I'm just embarrassing him at the moment. So, I just want to talk about new mills, because that's our first scheme. So, we obtained all the permissions, and I'm just thinking there, that's three words, I'll tell you what they are, well, I'll tell you what the permissions are, but all permissions obtained, that's about 9 months' work. So, it's 3 months per word. So we're trying to get that down to about 2 months per word. So we'll see. It is a 70 kilowatt Archimedean screw. It will produce that amount of units of electricity, they call kilowatt hours. I'm not bothering it out. Costs about £250,000. Easy to raise. It's not bad. It's quite achievable, actually, I think. It'll save that level of tons of CO2 per year. And work started on the 3rd of March, which should finish at the end of July, and of course it will. Here's an artist's impression. You can see the Archimedean screw there in the middle. There. You can probably just see, there's the river weir, obviously. So the water travels in here, goes down the screw, turns it, and comes back out there. Then, as I said before, it's the turning motion which produces the electricity. So that's what it looks like at the moment. That was took about 3 weeks ago or so. So work has progressed on since that. They built what's called a cofferdam, all those yellow bags, that's where the water intake is going to be, that's to prevent the existing river water going into the trench they're digging and just swallowing it up altogether. That's a view from the bridge, it's called Union Road Bridge. And it's a good view of the site, it just shows how much space you need to develop, to build one of these things. Although that space is slightly enlarged because there's other complications about sewage pipe of all things. But this view from the bridge is good because you can see this little bridge at the bottom there, that stone humpback bridge. The weight limit on that is 7.5 tonnes and the screw weighs 11.5 tonnes. So there's a bit of a problem there. So what we're doing is we're very slowly going to be lowering the Archimedean screw from the bridge where I was standing down, 100 foot down. And we'll make a big do of this. It's going to be called a big lift. And you're invited to come along. It's the 8th of June. It's a Sunday. It should be good fun. So we'll be lowering the screw down to, and then we'll be put in that trench here. That's for now. So a bit of background about the new mills one. Back in January 2007, we had a public exhibition over the weekend, and 250 people came to it, and absolutely everyone was in favour of it, of the hydro scheme in new mills. And so we were very pleased with that. And we went ahead with starting for planning application. However, it transpired. We were approached by the local Friends of the Earth and some other people who wanted more involvement in the scheme, rather than us being seen as some sort of strange third party going into an area, building a hydro site and coming out. Now, that was fine by us, because that's where our heart lies. And that's why we're a social enterprise, about community engagement. So that's a fantastic opportunity for us to enter into dialogue with some people in New Mills about how that would happen, because there has to be some sort of legal vehicle by which that happens. And so we went off and an ivory tower and looked at all sorts of different possibilities for a legal vehicle by which local people could become involved. And there it is on the bottom, folks. It's called an Industrial and Provident Society for the Benefit of the Community, or its acronym is BENCOM IPS. So it's a cooperative structure. It's ideal for what we want. So, Tolls Hydro New Mills Limited was set up with initially with 4 voluntary directors. That's got a level of 5. So, how did we raise £250,000? 3 ways: grants, equity, and loan. And I want to go into each of them in turn. The key thing, I think, here was the equity, because that was really marked this one out as different. There is a community hydro scheme in Wales, and with any of our publicity, we all made sure that we said it's the first community hydro scheme in the UK funded largely through equity, social equity. That's our defining difference. So we'll talk about grants. Our target was 30% capex being capping expenditure. 30% we want to try and find grants. Clearly we overachieved. The Peak District National Park gave £15,000. East Midlands Development Agency, which is the regional development agency in Yorkshire, it's Yorkshire Forward, gave £75,000. They weren't interested in it as a hydro scheme. They weren't interested in it as contributing to their targets for carbon dioxide emissions or anything like that. They purely wanted to do is to pilot the community-owned route. They wanted to see if it works, and it has done. That's why they did it. So we need to go back to end of the core. Since now it's worked, where do we go from here? And the co-op gave £45,000. Now this is where I think we begin to really mesh them together, because the co-op group is a cooperative structure. Towards Hydro and the Mills is a cooperative structure. It is part of the values of cooperatives to help each other, and that was one of the key reasons they gave money to Towards Hydro and the Mills. So in total of £135,000, which is 54% of the total, which wasn't bad at all. Equity. Now this is the really interesting part, because we've never done this before. So, Towards Hydro and the Mills was formed as a BenCom, IPS for Benefit of the Community, Industrial Problem Society. Modern rules were adopted. Talking in the next minute about what took a couple of months to do, really. And they worked with them to raise shares. Now, we all know about shares in the stock exchange, etc., and they're extraordinarily regulated by the Financial Services Authority. Because this is a BenCom IPS, an IPS for Benefit of the Community, we don't need to spend thousands and 50 plus thousands of pounds on getting the legal stuff right for a share issue. You don't have to do that because it's a BenCom IPS. So all you need to do is get a draft prospectus together saying why you want people to invest in this scheme. And the target rate of interest with the one in New Mills was 7.5%. That's all got to be agreed by a solicitor. Should say that the prospectus makes an absolute point of saying don't invest in this scheme if you don't want to lose your money. Only invest if you can afford to lose your money. It was absolutely specific on that, and you had to put that in as well. It's you don't have to spend thousands of pounds because of FSA, but it's FSA regulated. The FSA is still overlooked. So it's all within FSA regulations. So we're absolutely clear, don't invest in this if you think you're putting your life savings in, because you're not going to make money out of it. You're doing it because you are a social investor and you believe in what we're doing and what the community in Mills is doing. You believe that you can believe in fighting against climate change. That's why people put it in. The minimum shareholding is £250, maximum by law is £20,000. If some sugar daddy or sugar mummy put in £20,000, they'd only get one vote. And the person who put £250 in would also only get one vote. One vote per member. So a share size does not affect your vote. Then we have the launch of the prospectus. Huge big do about that, publicity wise. All sorts of publicity around The Guardian and Working Lunch and all this sort of stuff that was really exciting. And then there's the promotion of the prospectus. We spent 2 months promoting it with a huge big campaign. And lo and behold, I thought it'd be lucky to raise £20,000. And lo and behold, nearly £100,000. So I believe, in fact, that there is a real seam of social investors around, and it's possible to tap into them. And at one end of the scale, you've got the Richard Branstons, who are giving half their income or whatever it is to whatever it is they're giving it to. At the other end, that's what we're tapping into. In the middle somewhere, there are corporate organisations who do look for social investment opportunities called the blended return. In other words, they accept a lower return on their investment because they can sleep at night. In terms of the ethical nature of the investment. It's called a blended return. So there is a real market out there for social investment. Should also say that in New Mills, I think there's a total of 6,000 people in New Mills. It's downside more than that in Sheffield. So there's 208 shareholders, 65% are local, that's the SK postcode. The rest were obviously
SK22.
Thank you. The rest were obviously from further afield. I think the biggest share in was £2,500, I think. Biggest shareholder is five, two and a half. Right. So 208 shareholders, there we go. Now, why did it work? Well, I think there's some key reasons. There's a really good build up of contacts beforehand. All the public meetings, because there's a couple of public meetings beforehand to talk about it, the exhibitions, etc. So all those contacts were listed. And you know what it is with networks, they just kind of snowball. So that was really important, keep them in touch with what was going on. We also hired a PR person very cheaply because she believed in what we're doing, so that cost about £2,500. And she just could just run with it straight away. She had all the contacts, and that's one of the reasons, significant reasons why it happened. this little technical thing here, Enterprise Investment Scheme, if you put 500 quid in, so the minimum of 500 quid, you qualify for tax relief. So that actually puts the target return of 7.5% up to about 9% or so. So even that makes it more realistic. But I mean, as I say about that target return, we still say that that's the target. We're not necessarily going to get that. It's ultimately down to the directors and the shareholders to determine how much the shareholders will get. But the aim of the scheme isn't about giving interest to shareholders. It isn't about giving interest to shareholders, it's about benefit to the community, not come under that. Well, it was the right idea at the right time as well. The loan, we've got a facility of up to, it's actually 61,000 from the Co-op Bank. Again, it's this good fit with the Co-op, because they're dead keen now for small-scale hydro. All the big banks, which are the national banks, invest in the big wind farms, and the Co-op Bank can't compete. Co-op Bank is only within the shores. It can't compete with the big boy. So they're trying to re-gear their loan strategy towards small-scale hydro, which is wrong. Community benefit, what do we mean by that? Again, it's this acronym RPS, BenCom, it should be BenCom RPS, but never mind. So after various overheads, interest on shares, the remainder will go to the community of mills, and that's for the in italics there, for economic regeneration and environmental sustainability. So it'll be a grant scheme operated by the directors of Tolls Hydro and Green Mills. And we can't really give figures for this, because it does depend on rain, but I'm just being cautious on that. I like being optimistic about things, and we're thinking about around about Tolls Hydro and Green Mills, but the figures would stack up to around £5,000 a year. And once the loan's paid off, it's a 10-year loan, even more. So what we've actually found, what we've got actually here, is a fantastic opportunity where local people can become involved in tackling climate change, but a really exciting benefit at the end of the day, that the community can benefit. That's what the BenCom IPS is about, community benefit, not about shareholders, but the community benefit in the end of the day. So, Sheffield, third part of my thing. We started working in Sheffield almost about 2 years ago, actually, with a feasibility study on Niagara Weir. Do people know what happened to Niagara Weir?
It got flooded.
I was watching the telly after the floods, and this woman saying on the telly, "Don't go down to the weir fishing because there's nothing left." I thought, "Oh my God." So I went down the next day, and so this is almost right, not quite right, but the top of the weir was took off. It just shows the power of the water. Yeah. So that's money we spent, that's literally gone down the drain on the feasibility studies we did there. However, we are looking at, there's all sorts of other sites in Sheffield. And we were funded by the South Yorkshire Key Fund to do a study on them. And we have produced a report which went to Sheffield Council. But the Sheffield Council have also done a report as well, which you probably might be aware of, looking at renewable opportunities, new energy opportunities. So we're in discussion with the council about how to proceed. But on one of the exhibitions we had with Tolls Hydro, January last year, Rob and Rowan came along and... We had a chat with them, and they were really keen on developing something in Sheffield. So we were really keen as well. So here we are tonight at the public meeting. So there are dozens of river weirs in Sheffield. I wouldn't take the example of Niagara by any means as what would happen to all of them, because it won't. And there is the map which shows some other sites. We didn't do that map, it's the Sheffield Council's map. The red triangles, it says, are weirs which are unviable, but we disagree. Because they're looking at things around about the 50 kilowatt mark, and that's absolutely perfect for community hydro streams. Because you're looking around about £250,000 to weirs, and that is achievable. So we think those weirs are perfectly viable for community and streams. And the last slide, that's just a quick look at one of them. It's called Old Park Weir. On that, I've also heard a product called Ward's End Weir. That's Hillsborough College, into that sort of strange oval thing we do. So it's very near Hillsborough College, if anyone knows it. You probably wouldn't know it, actually, unless you went up this dirt track on the right-hand side there, because they all tend to be hidden away. So, just to finish off, we believe there's enormous opportunities for community and hydro schemes in Sheffield. Why not have a bash at what's called Old Park Weir, or Ward's End Weir? It's a 50 kilowatt one. The government's just changed, or the process of changing, the renewable obligation and certificate scheme, so there'll be more money for schemes underneath 50 kilowatt. It's called ROCs, if you've ever heard of these things. Schemes with 50 kilowatts now have a double ROCs, so it makes them even more viable. And anyway, the other thing is, what do we mean by viable? Because from a traditional sort of private enterprise point of view, viable is about high returns and what have you. But we're not about that. We're about community benefit. And the people who put their money into these schemes aren't about high returns either. They're also about supporting renewable energy because they want to fight against climate change and they want to produce some sort of community benefit for people. So we think it's a fantastic opportunity for people. And we kind of need to get involved. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that, Steve. This whole concept of social investment was totally new to me in sort of January of this year, and it seems to open up all sorts of opportunities. It's really exciting. We've got Till, and I'm sorry, Till's surname?
Geiger.
Till Geiger, who is, as Steve said, involved with the Torse Hydro development on the board. And he's going to give some of his own thoughts and perspectives on the process of getting involved with the IPS scheme and the Torse Hydro development. And then perhaps we'll take a couple of questions after Till has spoken.
Okay. I'm going to dispense with the microphone because these things always freak me out. Okay, my own involvement started really at these public meetings in New Mills. There was kind of the buzz around town that there would be one of these meetings. My wife and I went along. We were one of the people that initially said, yes, we want to invest, and were starting to look for a way to do that. And then the local Friends of the Earth started actually a local group. And in our discussions, it actually became really important to us that we actually owned it, the community. And that was kind of became then the driving force behind it. So we were actually really glad when Steve and Helen, one of the directors of Power Enterprises, came up with the IPS for the benefit of the community model for us to actually invest it and own the site. And of course, what appealed to us really was that there would be money for the local community to regenerate New Mills, because New Mills is actually, well, a slightly rundown old mill town. So actually, it can use some funds for regeneration. Now, in a way, I find myself, of course, in the position that Steve has said most of the things that might be of interest, particularly about how the IPS works. Now, we, in a way, of course, came late to the scheme. In a way, Helen and Steve had done all the hard work. They had obtained the planning permission, they had talked to the town council about the lease, and everything in many ways was on in place, and in many ways it didn't need us. I think it is to the credit of Helen and Steve that they supported community ownership. Now, once we started working together, I mean, we became heavily involved in writing the prospectus, in publicizing it, and particularly doing the local work on the ground, i.e. every weekend we conducted four tours down the Torse, which meant one of the directors had to turn up and be available and try to enthuse people, local people coming along. The response that we had on those tours always was fantastic. People did support it. And indeed, actually, locally, we only had one person who was kind of felt that the scheme might obstruct the view of the weir, because apparently New Mills, according to the complainant, is one of the few sites where you can actually walk right up to a weir and actually be on eye level with the weir itself. He was kind of trying to build up momentum for a campaign. And I think partly because we were there and partly also because the town council was really supportive and took him on, his campaign kind of ran out of steam. So I think ensuring local support is really important. Okay, like I said, on the tours, always, people were really pro, they were enthusiastic, willing to invest. Also, what we found rather surprising, having kind of been convinced by Helen and Steve that we needed a high interest rate to kind of attract maybe investors, particularly from outside the community, we actually found that people were saying, why are you going to pay us interest? I'm not saying that when you look at these schemes that you shouldn't pay interest, but I'm saying clearly think about the rate. People are not necessarily interested in that. They want to help to fight climate change, and many of our shareholders are wanting us to build the second one, not just the first one. So, okay. It's strange how people reacted to the scheme. There was a certain disappointment, for example, that people wouldn't be able to buy the electricity that we were generating directly. You know, they, in a way, literally wanted, you know, to buy shares to then get the electricity. So that was actually wrong. So there was also, they really liked also that the idea of a local benefit in the sense of that somebody local would buy the electricity. Now, we're working on that part. That isn't quite in the bag yet, but hopefully that will work. Also, the idea that possibly that this will generate income. Now, the appeal of the idea is also that people own a part of it, and that is part of the community, so that the investment is actually within the community. So, Steve has already mentioned the share issue was a very large success. Most of the shareholders are local. And I mean, they are even, I mean, the biggest investor is somebody local who said, we have always, my family has always invested in this area. And the woman came on one of the tours, and like I said, it's our largest investor. So try to stay civic pride in those sorts of schemes. Okay, Steve has already talked about the big lift. We are hoping to continue the promotion of us, the company, as part of the community. So we are planning, for example, which is something that we are probably going to continue in the future, is to have a stall at the local One World Festival, which is always held in late June. And we are proposing to offer, for example, tours on the day so that interested people will be actually guided down and have a look at the site. We're also trying, possibly, money permitting, to already give our first grant before we're actually producing energy to sponsor a group trying to make New Mills plastic bag free. Which is exactly the sort of thing that we want. Okay, for me, involvement, besides my enthusiasm to be actually doing something for climate change, besides, you know, all the things that we all do, has been that this is a fantastic adventure. I've learned a lot. I've certainly developed loads of new skills, mainly trying to negotiate with lawyers and reading legal documents. Now, in many ways, I admire the group here in my talks with them in the way they have actually gone out and seek advice. And actually, if I have one advice, do more of that. We have certainly benefited from joining the local Chamber of Commerce. The fact also that we have just joined Cooperatives UK, which again, as an organisation of cooperatives, that has been really helpful. I also think that the bottom-up approach is the best thing. Enthusiasm carries projects forward. I think realism at the same time is important. It is a huge time commitment if you become involved in these schemes. And not to deter you off, I think certain whites certainly have complained about people spending too much of Sunday afternoons at meetings. You also need money, and that is nasty, but you know, we were very, well, greatly helped by Water Power Enterprises, who basically bankrolled us until we had our own money. But it's something that needs thought early on, because actually you are going to be surprised how much money you spend early on. And generally, I think in these things, it's always best to expect the unexpected. There's always something you're going to overlook. However, and this brings me to my last point, manage expectations. Be honest that this is a social investment. As Steve said, you know, commercially, in a way, this doesn't make sense to have a low hydro site, because the investment really is only paid off after 20 years. Yeah? So therefore, you need people that want to do something against climate change. It's a social investment. And you ought to be honest about that, because otherwise I think there will be conflict. On the other hand, the rewards and returns that I think we are already seeing are potentially really great. And I wish you all lots of luck with your own scheme. And if we can do anything to help, we are more than happy, not just on the advice front, but we'll look at it. Okay?
Thank you very much. Sir, would you like to... Sorry, I don't want to stop with the applause. Do carry on. What I thought was... just changing tack a little bit, maybe while it's all up front of mind, we take a few questions on the hydro stuff, and then we've got a couple of other presentations which we can then talk about after that. Just before we do that, just to fill in a little bit of where Sheffield Community Renewables thinking has got to, as I say, we're all very excited about the Tors Hydro stuff, to the point where we're shareholders in the scheme, sort of a communal bid. We met these guys, talked to them, and they've been incredibly helpful in terms of moving our own thinking forwards. We're also very lucky that one of our members, Spila, who's in the audience somewhere, is a student at Sheffield Hallam, and she was looking for a project to do as part of her master's course. So she's running an options review, basically, and she's put in a fantastic amount of work, and we're really, really interested to see what she's going to come up with, and that's going to be probably finished in the next couple of weeks' time. And so these are all these pieces, and she's run around, spoken to lots of people, and these guys have been really helpful in that. And so just getting all the information together, and the next step really is to sort of go into the detail of that. And we've heard the overview today. We're going to have a meeting on the 22nd of May. It's probably a smaller meeting, where anybody who's interested in really getting involved with the work, very welcome to come along, and that'll be really scoping out, we'll looking at what the options are, and then deciding how we go forward and what the next steps are and who's going to do what really. So really, is there any questions that people would like to ask? Forest of hands. Okay, let's take it. You first.
have you got any idea what percentage of the electricity consumption of new mills this will generate? And secondly, what percentage of time do you think it'll run? Like, how often will it stop due to lack of water?
The first question, I don't know. I know that the Ofgem website says that the average two-bed house uses 4,000 units of electricity a year. So that thing, well, I'm sorry, the one at New Mills will produce enough for around about 65 houses. Now, some people think that, ooh, it's a bit small, isn't it? But I don't. So if you've actually ever seen 65 houses standing in line, that's not bad, actually, not bad at all. From a river weir, quite a small river weir, effectively, it just shows the power of what water can do. The second part of the question?
How often will it have to stop due to lack of water?
Right, this is what's called a capacity factor, and it will run at full whack, full tilt, for 45% of the year. We estimate that 29 days, yeah, if we're right. I mean, it might be more than that, maybe less, but the figures from the water show that it simply won't be running at all for 29 days of the year, just be stationary. So obviously that'll be the summer months. Most of the electricity is produced during the winter months, as you'd expect with seasonal electricity.
And that factor is including the calculations.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, the other thing to say is that actually, you know, we very often focus on private users. Actually, one of the things in looking for potentially a local user is actually that you wouldn't think it, but some local users use actually more electricity than the 65 houses.
Rick?
Yeah, a couple of questions. The Niagara Weir reminded me to ask this, which is, who's responsible for the maintenance of your weir? Mm-hmm. And secondly, what is the expected lifetime of one of these before they have to be overhauled?
Yeah, we just discussed the first one there. You've got to answer that.
Yeah, okay. It clearly is normally between the landowner and the environment agency, as the environment agency has a certain responsibility for rubbers. In New Mills, where clearly it would be one of the obligation of a company like Torres Hydro to ensure the weir, because it is really important that that is done.
So you take an insurance policy to cover the cost of repair?
Certain risks, yeah. I mean, clearly in a case like that, it's really important that you, if you can, intervene as early as possible to try to protect the weir.
Interesting enough, on hydro schemes, the River Weirs, and there are a number of them in this country, not one has ever done a structural survey on the River Weir, specifically because it costs an enormous amount of money. And I was talking to Dave Mann, who does our feasibility studies, etc. And he was saying, even if you did a structural survey on Niagara Weir, it could have come out fine, and it would still just demolish itself. It wouldn't really add anything to the equation. So the only thing you can do is mitigate against the risk, and that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, you know, in a large flood, if you have a huge tree trunk coming down, that could potentially damage it, and, you know, you have to be, I mean, you can't in a way foresee that. Now, as far as the lifetime is concerned, we are reckoning on 40 years, but the screws actually originally are used primarily as pumps in sewage treatment works, which is a much more hostile climate than in which we are using it, and there the life expectancy is roughly around the same.
It's 40 years.
Yeah.
When we visited the factory, they had one in, being refurbished after 20 years of pumping raw sewage. And that's after 20 years. And all they were doing, they had one of those big grinding off the edge and stuff like that. That's all they did. So that's one of the things I was saying about the technology. That's very simple technology. So the maintenance on these things is very low.
One comment and one question. The comment is, you've talked a lot about climate change, and actually I think there's another selling point, and that's about the cost of oil as it rises. Mm-hmm. And the question is a bit more about the difference between shareholders and the community, mm-hmm. particularly in the context of Sheffield, which is such a large community. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I do think you're facing a problem of a totally different magnitude. We are a small, old mill town. On the other hand, I mean, loads of people from outside have invested as well. I don't know. I don't think they... people, if you have a concrete project in mind, people will be willing to invest. Even so, I would... probably the benefit of the community actually has to go to the local community, or at least some of it has to go to a local community near Weir. And clearly that community really needs to be consulted. And
I think one of the concerns we had was doing a share issue, if it turned out that's the only 10% of people in the SK22 postcode were shareholders. But because the work which Torres Hydro did, because of the PR work, a lot of it was geared locally anyway, and all the stuff I was saying before about the building up of the head of steam of contacts, they were all local contacts. So you can gear the publicity, as it were, towards it. But I think what happened because of the stuff in New Mills was that people felt some sort of connection to it, because it was only half a mile or whatever down the road from them. And I'd have thought a similar scenario would happen in Sheffield.
And that's something that we've been talking about, and it's something we need to do something about. So certainly if there's people, you know, you've seen where the weirs that we're talking about are, and that's top on our list to start trying to talk to people who are around there. So if you know people, contacts, whatever, then do help us.
Can I just add, the paradox with the national publicity always was that it actually generated a lot of local interest. So even so, people did watch Working Lunch, which I mean totally amazed me. But it generated a lot of interest. And not that much actually from far away. We have very few shareholders that are long distances away.
Okay. So, but just very quickly, legally, the share offer is open to, is a GB resident, I don't know what it's...
Yeah.
Yes, GB resident. So you can't just restrict it to Sheffield. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we take some from the middle. Should we take sort of three questions at once? The guy with the hoodie on, this guy here, and the guy at the back. Okay, just take the questions and sass them, and then we'll take them in bunches.
It's your memory, really. You know, you've got the how are you going to distribute and sell the units?
Yeah,
benefit
the company?
Okay, so we take that. Take the next one as well at the same time.
I wrote that down.
Yeah. So who was the... Yes, the guy here, yeah.
Is it something that Section 106 money could be put towards from developers when in a community... I live down at Calum Island, and there are a lot of developments around there, and perhaps getting Section 106 money involved as part of the equity.
Okay.
A very positive move on that.
So 106 movements in the gut rank?
Yeah, the question is, I didn't notice any projects with energy efficiency for the community, and that doesn't seem required,
Okay, so energy efficiency projects.
Presented.
Okay,
sure. In renewables, you need to worry about the demand, and that wasn't there.
Okay, do you want to take this?
Can I just clarify the point, the first one about, just clarify the question again, sorry.
Yeah, you've got the unit in at the weir and it's creating the electricity. What measure are you taking to distribute and actually sell the unit so it's profitable for the community?
Right, I've got to be careful what I say here because we're still in negotiations with a major organisation which will buy them. I mean, it'd be great, wouldn't it, if local people could be wired up so their houses actually took the electricity. It'd be great, but it's enormously costly. And not just that, that person may decide to switch electricity provider. You know, so we stuck there. So you have to
The other problem, of course, is there are these 29 days where we're not producing energy, so whoever... buys the electricity of us still needs to be connected to the grid.
Yeah.
Also, they might not use all the energy, so we might want to sell it on to the grid, you know, the overspill.
Yeah. It's quite complicated. But the idea that it's local water, local people owning it, and a local thing will be buying the electricity all helps to make it a really good idea, good concept.
And the question about the 106 is?
Section 106, the Calum Island, yeah, that's one of the... we looked at that weir, Calum Island, as part of our study funded by South Yorkshire Key Fund. We were going to go ahead with that one until we found out that a thing called the Brooklyn Bridge is being built, and one of the piers of the Brooklyn Bridge is right smack bang where we put the hydro site. So, just come to your point, there used to be a water wheel there, you know the word water wheel pit by the... Yeah. The council is looking at reinstating that water wheel, and the developer, I think they're called Raven, will be paying for some of that under exactly what you've just said, that section 106.
So the race is now being cleared.
Yeah.
The
that's right.
Anyway, so
you're actually looking at section 106 money. Yeah.
So I guess the question there is how you would fit that in, because at the moment your model, you've got the equity, grants and loans, it was how you sort of fit in the 106 money as well. I mean, I think it's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's any private, there are a lot of, as I said, a lot of rivers in Sheffield, the 5 years walk being a really good example, and if there are private developers wanting to develop hydro sites, river weir, sorry, as a hydro site, that could be a sort of planning condition put on the...
I think I was thinking more of if there is a development going on next to a weir, get in at that stage and earmark the 106 money for this type of project.
Yeah, that'd be a great idea. Yeah.
And the final question about energy efficiency.
Well, I mean, we have certainly thought about that some of the projects that we would, for which we would make grants available, is actually that sort of energy efficiency, possibly also
helping, I don't know, the school to get sun collectors on the roof, that sort of project in what we have discussed.
That's not what I meant by energy efficiency. But
we also potentially will fund, if people want to insulate the houses, try to reduce it. Look, the room for improvements in energy efficiency are huge. I mean, the organization that we're talking to, they have just reduced or are in the process of making investments to reduce their energy use by roughly a third, which creates whole new problems for us. But I think these things have to go hand in hand. But I think what hydro schemes like this can do, they can raise the issue and actually make people more aware, and I think they will also then think about other steps they can take themselves.
What did you particularly mean by energy efficiency?
Sorry?
What do you particularly mean by energy efficiency?
Well, there's a great lack of insulation in Vermont.
Yeah.
And there is the direct support for the homeowner to do that.
Yeah.
But it's very, there isn't enough of that. And what's going on is fuel poverty is increasing right now, especially in relation to biofuel.
Yeah.
That's being relation to the cost. What governments across the world are doing in relation to biofuels. And so, and also the other area with energy efficiency is the, you have to look at people, look at their demand.
Yeah.
So they have to look at what appliances they're using or not using. There's been a whole increase of all the people using mobile phones and computers, but there's no, so we're on the increase of using energy, not less. And
certainly in terms of the hierarchy of tackling climate change, on the top there is reducing energy demand.
Yes, that's what we have to do.
And actually producing renewable energy is step three, not step one.
Unfortunately, some of the projects that started with B&Q with wind has been a disaster, total disaster, because the initial piece of equipment wasn't properly field tested.
Mm-hmm.
So people are being burned by the whole new entrepreneurial bandwagon around climate change.
I think, as Till said, I think it's a really good idea matching the renewable energy generation up towards hydro and other hydro sites with the community benefit. And one of the community benefits will be about helping energy efficiency in new mills. So I think it's a really good tie up there, actually.
And the other sort of point observation, I suppose, if we can do 60 normal houses, then if we have energy efficient houses, then maybe we can do 80 in the same scheme.
That's a good point. Yeah.
If we maybe do one more round of questions. Is anyone at the back who wants a question? We haven't. Okay, these three people here. Okay, one, two, three.
Just a couple, really. Is there a feasibility for using the principle in large sort of artificial water transport, like surface water drains and things like that?
Okay.
That's one. And the other one is, somebody said in Sheffield, there's a number of, would you be averse to having a larger scale company covering a number of projects within Sheffield to attract larger scale foreigners?
Okay, next one.
My question is about community benefit, which I find very interesting, but it does seem a little bit woolly. It seems to me it breaks down into three parts. One, the knowledge that you're actually helping the climate. Two, financial benefit with the shares paying back. And three, some non-financial benefit of actually doing something community together and actually having something by your weir, owning your weir and it's local and stuff. But I think it needs looking at a bit more. I mean, like the idea of having a knock-on effect to actually help people save energy in their own homes and so on. How is that actually going to happen with the share payouts? I mean, you can't, as far as I know, you can't control that. The shareholders will take their share money away.
Yeah.
So how is that actually going to get laid out on the ground? And then the sort of non-financial benefits, how do you envisage that actually happening? Is it not going to seem like some outsider has come in, actually, even though we contributed a little bit of money to it, install this into our community, they did it for us, kind of thing.
Okay. And the third one?
Yeah. This is about the environment, the impact on the ecology of the area and on the actual beauty and the view of the area.
Okay, so there's three questions. The first one first about surface water opportunities and large-scale company coming in and doing some more schemes.
There's a company at the moment called, I think it's Hydro Energy Solutions, I might be wrong, but they're looking at trying to develop renewable energy just from running water, never mind having a head of water from a river here. So there are companies actually looking at that, and that would be, I think, be a fantastic investment opportunity, actually. That's a model, but that can actually produce around about 3 kilowatts of energy. An installed capacity of about 3 kilowatts, that model itself. So they're all made for different, tailor-made for different weirs. They're not in the module which comes in, you fit them in. So you can, any size will do. So even small heads of, even half a metre, would produce energy. So there's all sorts of different types of weirs. The bigger flows of rivers and the larger weirs, these things can be put in series, in parallel, like double-barrel shotgun. You can put one or two together. But there comes a point at which it becomes uneconomic to do that, and you have to go to the higher, the more engineered turbines, like the thing called a Kaplan turbine. In terms of the larger scale company, I'd probably leave that with Rob at the moment, but I think Till's already alluded to it slightly, in that he was saying that because the River Goyt, which is the river we're talking about, has a number of weirs on it, and it would be fantastic if the same water goes through one generous estuary, goes through another weir generous estuary, which is exactly what they did in the Industrial Revolution. So it's just going back 200 years using 3,000-year-old technology to produce energy now. So anyway, sorry.
That's great. And the one, to try and quite sharp answers because we're running out of time, but the community benefits, the sort of the slightly less fuzzy.
Okay. Clearly, the one element that you left off in kind of your thing was that we are planning to give grants, either for the energy efficiency or for regeneration of the local community. So I think in that, actually, relative to what we will give to shareholders is roughly similar amounts. Now, we are pretty confident that shareholders are not going to ask for the 7.5%, and we are potentially thinking about developing further schemes. As Steve has indicated, there are other weirs that we potentially could use. So, I mean, we're looking at long-term perspectives. Now, there's also another benefit to the community, which is, besides the ownership, I mean, the school has been really interested, and kids have been down there. The kids at the school have invested, actually, in the scheme. The idea is, you know, that the teachers will be able to take students down and show them actually how electricity is generated, and it will be great that is owned by the community, and that again then goes on to educating people about sensible energy use and cutting back. I think that all fits actually quite neatly together. Ecology and community.
You sound as though you've got some great ideas around, or potentially some great ideas or some inputs on those issues. So we'd be really interested to maybe hear your ideas for Sheffield.
On the ecology, there has to be various ecological reports written about the thing anyway. You wouldn't get planning permission unless you do various things, one of which is reports about how the scheme would affect the ecology of the area. Ditto with the Environment Agency. I mean, in terms of the beauty of the area, it's a beautiful site. I have to say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I think these things, once they're actually working, are actually quite beautiful things to see, actually see energy being generated. The other quick point I want to make is that the predictions of climate change in the future, the mid-range scenario by 2015, is that between 20 and 30% of the plant and animal species will be wiped out on the planet. So in terms of what is the priority, I think by putting these things in, you help to save the planet.
Yeah. Also, I mean, you know, if you own the thing, you can also partly control what you're doing. I mean, we have a blog. We try to keep people informed, and partly the blog also talks about the ecology and what we're doing. So we have, for example, taken steps to protect in the wall, for example, birdwatch has told us a certain type of bird was nesting, and we're going to ensure that the nesting places will be preserved. That sort of dialogue actually in normal projects doesn't happen. I think that's really an argument more for community consultation and ownership. Also, if you start this early, you can talk to people, and if they have particular concerns, they can be addressed. I mean, in the case of New Mills, I mean, if we had known that it was really, you know, the site of the weir, you know, we would have had a viewing platform on top of the engine house. I mean, but you need that sort of thing, you need to establish before you apply for planning consent.
Okay, great. I hope that's been really interesting. I mean, it's been very interesting for me. I've learned lots. So, and so with schedules changed slightly, but we've got two more presentations on some other projects which either are ongoing or we're thinking about as part of the community renewables work. I know some people are needing to leave, starting to leave at 7:30. That's fine. Please do so quietly. Now's a good time. Okay, so the first presentation is going to be about our school's work, and it's by Mark Wells, a member of Sheffield Community Renewables.
Okay, so I'm just going to talk for 10 minutes or so about another project that Sheffield Community Renewables has set up. And here we're hoping to set up some links with local schools around Sheffield to try and look about how we can make school buildings and behaviour within the schools more sustainable. So our idea here is to reach out to local schools and work with these schools to look at ways in which you can reduce energy consumption within the school building, and also look at how we might get renewable energy generation installed within the schools. So we'll be looking at technology like photovoltaics or wind turbines that can be fitted onto existing school buildings. We'd really like to design these installations so that it can be used as an educational resource. So we could, for example, arrange to have displays within the schools that could show the energy generated by the renewable sources on site. And that could be then incorporated into the school curriculum. So we also want to involve the students within any schools we work with as much as possible in the development of the project. So that could be things like helping with fundraising, helping promoting the project to the press and the community, and even to have some input from the school students into the design of the project. So other schools in the country have run similar projects, and elsewhere they've succeeded in funding renewable energy generation and energy efficiency work entirely from external sources, for example through government grants, charitable donations and their own fundraising. So next slide please. So this project has benefits on several levels, we hope. First of all, you have the savings in carbon dioxide emissions that renewable energy generation and energy efficiency work will bring. And these will, of course, bring cost savings to the school. But these sort of projects also have much wider benefits as well. First of all, experience with other schools that have introduced renewable generation on site shows that once you have renewable generation in place, it really gets people thinking about their energy usage, and so you will see not only saving in terms of actual energy generated by the renewable sources, but people tend to use less energy when they see that energy is being generated on site, purely because it gets them thinking more. So we're hoping that this benefit could well fan out into the local community. So once you get students in the school thinking about their energy usage, perhaps they will go home and talk to their parents. We're also hoping that having highly visible renewable energy generation within a prominent community building will get people thinking about the potential for this technology to be applied on a more wide scale within the community. And We're also hoping that by getting young people involved in the development of the project as much as possible, we'll perhaps inspire a younger generation of environmental activists who we hope get some belief in their ability to do something positive for the environment and to help with climate change. Have the next slide, please. So I'm just going to look briefly at a couple of other schools around the country where renewable energy has been put in place on the school site. So first of all, Wood Hay School's in Manchester, and this school won a Ashton Award for Sustainable Energy. This is a primary school, 300 or so pupils. So they installed a 2-kilowatt photovoltaic array on the roof of the school building. And they've also put in place an electronic display to show how much energy this PV array has generated. But this has been part of a wider range of energy efficiency measures. So by more conventional energy efficiency measures like insulation and double glazing, they've managed to reduce their gas consumption by 30%. They've tried to involve the school pupils at every stage in this. So they have an eco-council in the school that carries out spot checks on energy wastage in classrooms. And this project was entirely funded from sources outside the school budget, so DTI Clear Skies grants paid for half of it, and that was matched by fundraising from the Parent Teacher Association of the school. Next one, please. So, second school, Seaton Primary School in Devon. So this is, again, a small primary school in the seaside resort of Seaton in Devon. And they've installed a 4.7 kilowatt PV array on the roof of the school, and also a 2.5 kilowatt wind turbine. So they're one of the few schools in the country to have more than one source of renewable energy on the school site. Now, the renewable generation on the school site is estimated to give a carbon dioxide saving 2 tonnes per year. But then they've matched this by setting up a range of energy efficiency measures within the school, again involving the pupils of the school as much as possible. So, for example, they have class energy agents which are responsible for reducing energy wastage in the classroom, so turning off lights and computers and things like that. And by reducing energy usage, they think they've matched the carbon saving that's come from renewable energy, so perhaps saving another 2 tonnes of carbon dioxide emissions per year. This project was 100% financed by grants from external sources, including EDF Energy, again the Clear Sky Scheme, Co-op Group and Devon County Council. So next slide, please. So, when we at Sheffield Community Renewables decided we want to set up a similar project, we made contact with several schools and teachers around Sheffield to try and gauge the interest in such a thing, and we got an incredibly enthusiastic response from nearly everyone we contacted. But we only have so much time and energy, so we decided to start working with Tapton School, where two of the staff are very keen to work with us. So we decided to really pilot this sustainable schools project at Tapton School. So we fairly easily won the backing of the governors and their head teacher at Tapton. But it turned out that because Tapton is a PFI school, a fairly new building, that the council were very concerned about the complications this would bring into their contract with the PFI company. So we had to put a great deal of effort into winning around the council to allow us to continue working on the project to develop it, and then also to develop a relationship with the PFI company that actually owns the school building. But I'm pleased to say that we now have approval in principle from the council and from the PFI owners of the building to move forward with the project. And although there are many other examples around the country of schools that have put in place renewable energy sources, very often with PFI school buildings, people have been put off because of the difficulties in working with both the PFI building owners and council and all the contracts involved in all of this. So we're hoping that by driving this project forward within the PFI school, we can set an example of how this can be done with one of these new PFI buildings that are so common in the country. So we've put together a team to work on the project. So there's myself. Really been working on dragging various people in and getting people to commit their time and energy. So First of all, we've got Ruth Hollinger, who's a teacher at Tapton School, and she's been really pushing the project within the school, and also her colleague Amanda. Phil Woodhead, who is a facilities management consultant and formerly a building manager for a PFI school, and he's kindly volunteered his time to create project plans that are so valuable in convincing council and PFI companies to go forward with the project. And also John Taylor, who's going to help us with the next phase of the project, which will be a feasibility study for renewable generation on the Tapton site. He again has volunteered his time. So could I have the next slide, please? So here's the outline of the more kind of bricks and mortar side of the project and where we're hoping to go with it. So we've now got agreements in principle from all the important stakeholders. And the next stage is to get a feasibility study done to look at the various possibilities for renewable generation on site. So this will allow us to put together a detailed project proposal, which will form the basis of grant applications to certainly the government's low carbon building programme, but also to the various green energy funds that the electricity generation companies have set up. So that will again be people like EDF Energy, E.ON, Scottish Power. So, yes, and perhaps simultaneously with the fundraising, we'll be moving on to getting quotes for the installations and then moving on to the design and planning permission after that. And we're hoping to have some progress on construction within a year or so. So, alongside this more sort of practical side of the project, we're looking at developing curriculum materials that can be used to incorporate the energy efficiency and renewable energy measures into the school curriculum. Heather and Lawrence have very kindly volunteered herself to help with that. So can we move on to the next slide, please? So there's lots of opportunities to get involved with this project. So if anyone's keen to volunteer time and energy to work with us, then we'll be very pleased to hear from you. So first of all, development of curriculum materials. We'd be really keen to hear from people who've got ideas on that. Secondly, with fundraising, we're going to need a lot of help with that. What we would really like to do is be able to work with more schools in Sheffield, because we've had, as I say, an enthusiastic response from several schools, but we only have so much people power. So if we could get more people involved with the organisation, then perhaps we could reach out to other schools in Sheffield and perhaps set up more of these sort of projects in the Sheffield area. So yes, if this project is exciting to you, then please get in touch. My email address is there, or just come and talk to me right now.
Thanks, Mark. I mean, I've been mostly involved with the hydro side, so I've just been watching Mark get on with this from the side. And for what was supposed to be the small project, I think it's been really interesting watching, bringing all these expertise and resort and sort of volunteer expertise in, overcoming these barriers with the PFI stuff. It's been great, and it's sort of really looking really good. If you just want to take a seat on the panel, and we'll have John Malone next, who's from Energy for All, so he works on the wind side, and they're pioneering community-based wind projects across the country. John's actually based in
Johnfield,
so it's great to have a local and have his perspective on this.
Can you give me my slides up?
Yeah, I'll put your slides up. Yeah. You do 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll go out through. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Rob, for the invite to come and speak to you tonight. And I think I will sort of gallop through this presentation in the interest of time, but I think it's to sow a seed of what other communities, what Energy for All and what other communities are doing around the country, which may in time lead to something happening in Sheffield. As Rob says, I work for Energy for All, and we... Can you just go on to the... We are a company whose mission is to develop community-owned renewable energy schemes through a cooperative model. So there's some resonance with what Steve and Till have already said, that there are some differences which I'll try and highlight as we go through. Energy for All was established by the Baywind Energy Cooperative, which was the first community-owned wind farm in the UK, which was established some 10 or 11 years ago now. The Baywind Energy Cooperative was so successful that it was inundated with inquiries about how can we replicate a model, how can we do it, how did you do it? And they took the decision to establish Energy for All 5 years ago in 2002-2003. Baywind's been operating for 10 years and owns six turbines in Cumbria. And it has 1,300 members and raised £1.9 million through a share offer to purchase the turbines. Over that 10 years, it's been calculated that the co-op has enabled £1 million to be retained in the local community that would otherwise have gone outside if it had been a developer-led scheme. And returns to members in 2005, I think that's one of the highs, the 9%. It varies year on year depending on the wind, but the average is somewhere between 6 and 7%, I think, for the Baywind members. Can you give us the next slide, please? So Energy for All was set up by Baywind with these aims. The grand aims of trying to contribute to a low-carbon energy generation system in the UK, but to provide a means for communities to become involved in renewable energy generation, and in a wider sense, provide a community of interest with an opportunity to make an ethical investment in renewable energy schemes. Energy for All is a company limited by shares, and we're owned by the co-ops that we established. So our shareholders are the five co-ops that we've now set up. If I can have the next one, please. What Energy for All does is work with communities to build the structures that allow that community to own a stake in a renewable energy generation project. We work either entirely with the community and develop the project from scratch with the community, but we also work hand-in-hand with wind energy developers who are looking to enable the local community to take a stake in the project. I'll give a couple of examples of those two approaches during the presentation. We plan and launch FSA-regulated share issues. As Steve touched on, there are different ways of doing it, and our share issues, which aim to raise £750,000 and upwards, are fully FSA-regulated, so there's a substantial cost associated with that. Once we've raised the finance, we then can project manage the development of the site through, or we can purchase assets from a developer, and then we're able to support the community co-op and administer the project going forward as it becomes operational. Next one, please. We use an industrial and provident society model that Steve has touched on. It's not a BenCom, it's not set up for the benefit of the community. It's an IPS, which is set up for the benefit of the shareholders. So it is an ethical investment vehicle. But a lot of the things that Steve said do apply. Key is that share interest is distributed to members at a rate of somewhere between 8 and 10% is the target in our share prospectuses. And investors also qualify for the Enterprise Investment Scheme, as Steve touched on. Next one, please, Ron. As well as the investor benefits, with investments limited to between £20,000 at the ceiling and £250 at the minimum end, it's still exclusive in the sense that some people may feel they can't invest. So all the co-ops have established community funds, and a revenue stream is paid into that fund by the co-op, which has a separate group of trustees to manage the fund and to spend that fund in a similar way by giving grants but addressing issues of climate change, energy efficiency, renewable energy projects in a fairly clearly defined local area to the wind energy scheme. Next one, please. So far we have, how many projects have we got there? Five projects up and running and another two to come on stream this year. As I mentioned, we have the fully community-owned model. The red stars are the fully community-owned schemes, and the green ones are the partnership with the developer scheme. I'm going to give a couple of examples of an example of each of those models. Next one, please. Oh, slightly before we do that. That's fine. Yeah, just before I go into the examples, that's a list of the five co-ops that are in existence that we've worked with. £11 million have been raised through the FSA regulated share offerings.
distributed like that across the scheme, so that the more substantial financial projects than the ones that Steve's talking about, by their very nature, wind energy schemes tend to be bigger anyway, which is why we go down the FSA regulated route. Next one, please. In Oxfordshire, Adam Twine, a farmer there 15 years ago or more, was determined that he would use his land for a community-owned wind energy scheme. He has carried a lot of the cost of that scheme through that 15-year period, but it has remained a 100% community-owned scheme. And Energy for All came in 2004 to support Adam and the community group to set up Westmill Wind Farm Corp. in order to raise the capital to build the project. Adam and the group had managed to get the project to Planning Permission, and Energy for All was invited in to structure the co-op and to carry out the share launch, which raised £4.6 million, backed with a cooperative bank loan, enabled the co-op to buy five 1.3 megawatt turbines. So that's at the larger end of the projects that we've been involved with and have supported. The project started generating in February this year, and the official launch is this weekend. The AGM official launch of the scheme happens on Saturday. Next slide, please. In contrast, another recently completed scheme is the Fens Green Power Co-op. EDF, the developer on this site just outside Peterborough, are offering two turbines for sale to the community out of a site which has eight turbines on it. So again, Energy for All were invited to work with the community to structure the co-op to allow those turbines to be purchased by the co-op. The share offer raised £2.6 million, and back to the bank loan, the process of buying those turbines is now going through. So within the next month or two, the co-op will start to benefit from the revenue of turbines which are already in existence. So this is a slightly less risky investment for somebody who's looking at prospectus, because you can actually go and see the turbines operating, and there's historical data over a year or two of what the turbines have actually been producing. Next one, please. When Energy for All carries out a scheme, what we're looking for is primarily wind up to press, as you can see, but we also have an interest in other energy projects. We work only on schemes which the community will eventually take a stake in, and we're looking to see that the co-op will deliver significant benefit both to the investor members, but also through a community fund to the local community who may not be able to afford to invest in the scheme. We also need the willingness of the community to get involved. We're a company that doesn't have a large resource, and we need to work alongside groups such as Sheffield Community Renewables, who we can work with, help build capacity of to deliver the scheme. But critically, we're looking for viable projects. We haven't brought any grant funding into our scheme because they've attracted in the investment they've needed, and they've attracted bank loans because they have proven to pay a reasonable dividend of somewhere between 8 and 10%. So it's a slightly different offering because it's on a different scale to what Stephen has talked about. So we would carry out an assessment of the financial model and business plans before we got too far down the track, if you like. The website at the bottom there is a recently launched guide for communities looking to try and assess a site that they might have. So it's a step-by-step guide through the process of developing a wind energy project to allow you to sort of capture early information that you might need to allow you to assess that site. You can get to it through our own website, but it's got its own URL there. I think we're getting close to the end. I'll skip that one. As has been mentioned, really, energy is essential for our society, but we would say critically energy efficiency and the efficient use of that energy is key. Notwithstanding that fact, however, the renewable energy projects that we propose and support present a fantastic way of engaging a community with the issues of energy supply and energy use, and I think both Till and Stephen said the same things. The projects can enable communities to understand the issues, can bring the communities together to start looking at the issue in their own setting, and importantly can provide the funding to start to tackle issues such as energy efficiency in their schools, in their own buildings and in their own houses. So projects like this can deliver significant CO2 savings, both to the generation that they develop, but also through savings that can be made through the education process, and can lead to some of the other benefits set out there. That's it. My contact details are there, and please get in touch. I've got some leaflets just with reference to our contact details. Should in time this kind of... I know around Sheffield there are wind energy projects being looked at. If the community wants to get involved, this is one vehicle that you may want to consider. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Just like take a seat. If people can manage another 10 minutes, I think it'd be great if we could just kind of round things out. Stephen Till, would you like to come up and join us at the front? From just to explain a couple of bits about the last two projects. Clearly, the schools work is something we really really want to keep going and keep pushing as part of Sheffield Community Renewables, and we've already made good progress on that. The wind stuff, we're just really starting to talk about it, and obviously there's been developments in Sheffield around wind, and there's all sorts of fallout associated with that, and we're trying to understand what Sheffield Community Renewables can contribute and how we want to get involved and if we want to get involved. So really we're open to ideas, if people have lots of energy and enthusiasm around that, to maybe work with us on that. And also we're trying to understand how the two can fit together, or how we can work on the hydro stuff and the sort of social model, and then the more financial model with the wind. Any questions? A couple of questions. Take Rick first. Yeah.
To yourself, do you have any rule of thumb about distance, minimum distance between turbines and homes?
We would start at 700 metres, but we would also say that we do go, and you can go closer than that. It then becomes an issue of background noise and appropriate wind monitoring during the appropriate noise assessment during the environmental impact process. So one scheme we're currently involved with, the nearest house is 640 metres away, and very careful wind monitoring and assessment of the noise is being carried out, and the planning committee will make a decision about whether that is satisfactory given guidance about noise levels, etc. But I think in general, the starting point looking at site is, can we get 700 metres away from all the sensitive noise receptors? And if we can't, it might mean choice of turbine is important in terms of the size and the noise output from those turbines, and things like that.
Okay.
Talking about the schools project, I and three other colleagues from the University of Sheffield actually did a feasibility study on the city schools. Of Sheffield, and I mean, we did a pretty comprehensive approach. I don't approach them, sure, but there's several teachers there who are deaf keen as well.
Yes.
And I think they got a grant for doing some of the work, but I don't know how that went.
Yes, I've heard a lot about that project from Lawrence Jones at the council, because he kind of spearheaded the council's involvement on it. But yeah, I'd be really interested to get in touch with some of the teachers actually on the ground who are involved in that.
The data for the feasibility study, so if you want to find out, I've got a little drive. Wrote it, so,
Yeah, well, we should talk about that afterwards. That'd be really handy.
Sounds like you should swap phone numbers. Yeah. Any questions? The guy with the herbs first.
Yeah, just go back to the water project. Have you guys had any indications on how long it had to be running before the actual unit became carbon neutral from the production of the unit itself?
It's a ratio of 1,200 to 1. In terms of the units of energy to make the turbine or the cement, etc., and the involvement of civil engineers, it produces 1,200 times more energy than it takes to create.
Is that in its whole lifetime, or is that over a certain?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, yeah.
This is in relation to the schools project. First of all, I'm aware of this new primary school in Healy, just the south of Sheffield city centre, where the building, I believe, is insulated using old pairs of jeans. So do you think they might possibly qualify? And secondly, do you also see yourselves expanding this project to cover other types of educational establishments such as FE colleges and universities, that are going to improve energy efficiency in their buildings?
Well, we're going to really take it one step at a time. We want to work initially just with one school and see what we learn from that. And hopefully that will put us in a position to go and work with other organisations and other schools in Sheffield. You mentioned the university itself. I was just talking to some of the members of the audience here before the presentation about proposals to get renewable generation capacity put in at the Student Union building. So, yeah, that's something that's on the cards there.
Stephen, you had a comment.
Two quick things related to what you're saying there is that, that we are talking about called, we call Ward's End, where there's just a few hundred metres away from Hillsborough College in terms of energy generation. The other thing I was going to say in terms of the schools project, if there's any schools fairly adjacent to a river wheel, there's a fantastic opportunity for energy generation by an angle.
A couple more, probably. Chris, I think you did your question.
Yeah, but John, I'm interested in the community wind projects, and the one that's been mooted for Sheffield has run into pretty universal opposition in Chapeltown, it seems. So, I mean, do you get a lot of opposition in, you know, like places like Cumbria, where people are complaining about a lot of wind and noise and all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's no statistical evidence that getting the community involved makes any difference to the, you know, to the view that people have in terms of the impact, the visual impact, the noise. With wind, you tend to be either in one camp or in another. As my friend says, when it's windy, it's very hard to sit on the fence. So you still get the polarised views, even. Even with a community, you know, a significant community stake, I think.
I live 1 mile away from a 24 wind turbine farm, and we're fully in support of it. Just you don't realise it's there now. And we've also got a 5 kilo wind turbine.
The back.
I don't mean to be particularly about the Anne's Grove School with the insulation. It's actually made from industrial denim waste.
Oh,
but unfortunately, the contractor tried to play up as if it was old jeans.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I won't go in. Other people here know why I would know why. Anyway, my concern and interest is more to things on a small scale rather than a low tech rather than high tech. My concern is with projects developing on the high tech straight away with schools. And not low tech. And low tech would mean that it's something that's doable that people can do and make themselves. Mm. Well, they can't necessarily make solar electric panels themselves, but they can make solar water heating panels themselves. And I think from an educational point of view, you want to bring people in on that level, on a high tech level. And unfortunately, our economy thinks that technology is the answer on a high tech level. And it doesn't work that way. And from my point of view anyway, to get people to understand things, you want to start out where they can get their own hands dirty with something. They can't take a solar electric panel apart. They can make their own generator for a wind generator. Yes, they can. But then again, from one that's going to be viable, that's another, you know, to make an impact on carbon, that's another matter. And my concern is the high tech is often taken as the first step.
Mm.
And I think that should be a step down the way for people to get a better understanding of how solar technology and renewables work.
Well, yes, what I would say is that where these schools projects have been carried out elsewhere in the country, the renewable energy installation has always been part of a wider commitment to energy saving, and I suppose the lowest tech possible approach to energy saving is simply turning off electronic equipment.
No. It's always high tech in relation to putting photovoltaics in. They don't look at a lower tech of where the kids can actually learn how inventive and do something with the technology. You can't do it. All they do is see a meter, but they don't get themselves involved in invention and discovery about the technology itself. And from my point of view, that's where the focus needs to be.
Mm, yeah, I take your point. That's something we can look at.
And I wonder whether it's an either-or situation. I mean, can we not do both? Some people get engaged by high-tech stuff. Some people get engaged by low-tech stuff. Maybe there's a multiple routes we can take on that. Steve, I think we better. Sorry, Heather, go on.
Okay,
one last question.
Yeah, on the energy one, just two points. I think on the schools one, education one, I think it's very exciting. I wondered about the scale of it. I was surprised to learn about a Seaton primary school, which has a PV and the turbine, but but it was only saving 2 tons a year. So it's like, what percentage, do you know, what percentage of the electricity that the school used?
I think in the case of Seton School, it was something like 10% of the total energy usage of the school. In the case of Woodhayes, it was more like 3 or 4%.
Right.
So obviously there is a limit to what you can do with renewable generation on site, but part of the role of the renewable energy generation is just simply getting people thinking about where their energy comes from. But with larger grant applications, you could do more. I think in both those cases, if they'd had more money, they could have got more capacity in.
The other point is that I think one of the most exciting education projects is at the Centre for Alternative Technology, where there's it's to do with turbines, and they've got a reservoir of water, and there are cabins that students live in for a week, and they monitor, and this lake generates a turbine, and they can choose how they use their energy.
Mm.
And it includes water for flushing a toilet, or they've got a compost toilet. Computers, electric fryers, or whatever. So it's not low tech, but it's really showing where your energy comes from and having to make choices. So that's quite an ambitious project, but something, you know, thinking ahead.
Yeah, it might be a good place to go and take a trip to have a look around.
Okay, great. I think we really should call this bit to a close now.
Can I just come back on, Chris?
Sure, yeah.
It's something that's just come to mind about the whole planning and opposition. I think what we do find is if, as a retrofit, you know, it's too late to get a community scheme up and running if there is significant opposition because it's been thought of at a late in the day, if you like. I think, you know, the most satisfactory approach is to start very, very early on. I think you were saying the same thing.
Get
a balanced view out there, you know, that this can be a benefit as well as there are disbenefits in some people's eyes, quite clearly, you know, but is it a disbenefit and somebody far away is benefiting, or is there a community opportunity to get involved? And I think there, when we're involved from a very early stage, we get a much more balanced debate going on.
Right. Just final slide then. I mean, I found it really fascinating, all the presentations today, and thanks a lot to all the presenters. This is just a summary, which I've already said, about how we're going forward as Shefford Community Renewables in terms of completing the hydro study, meeting on the 22nd of May to think about how we can move forwards, whether we go forward with some sort of IPS model around some of the things we've talked about today, progressing the school projects, or are there new projects and new directions we want to move in. There's going to be a whole thread around raising publicity, building networks, recruiting supporters, and getting funding applications. There's a whole stack of stuff which people can get involved with if they're interested in. So if you are, please do come along to that meeting on the 22nd, or drop me an email and let us know what you're interested in. Beyond that, stay in touch through our email list. We're also going to put most stuff through the SCAC email list, the Sheffield Campaign Against Climate Change email list. Jenny does a fantastic job on that every month, and that's well worth getting on if you're not already. Other than that, watch this space and look out for those investment opportunities coming up. So thanks again to the presenters, really. If you're quick, you can get a quick coffee now. And we're also going to the DevCat, people fancy a drink later on.
Three brownfield sites.